Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League. Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham's flick, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Finally, welcome back to another edition of Wheeler Dealer Radio. We are back from our month-long hiatus. I am Skipjack, and I am glad to be done with this freelance project, which has been destroying my life. And we have returned to podcasts. Well, most of us have returned because our oldest and most esteemed member, Brian, is in London as we speak, preparing to watch Spurs fight their way towards Europa League glory against Ghent. He is also there with frequent Wheeler Dealer Radio substitute Vince. Hopefully they'll bring us victory. Probably they'll just bring us a draw if our podcast history is any indication. But the rest of us are all here today, and we're ready to talk about Tottenham Hotspur after a month away. Leading us off is my sidekick, the Robin to my Batman, Ben Daniels. Ben, at what point during our hiatus did you give up on Moussa Sissoko?
Oh, I guess that would have been August.
It's been a long hiatus then, huh?
Yeah. I'm glad I'm finally here to be able to talk about my feelings on this transfer. I have some takes.
Yeah, we're eagerly anticipating them. Next up, we have our evil numbers wizard, Michael Cayley. Michael, when did you give up on Moussa Sissoko during our month-long hiatus?
I would like to take credit for thinking that he was bad from the start.
It was a bold take. It was a very bold take.
I based it on the evidence that he'd been bad all the other times that he'd played soccer.
If I could remember the exact wording of Donald Trump's analytics and call his own shots tweet, I would use it right here.
Based on a preponderance of data or based on a...
An accumulation of data.
Accumulation of data. He definitely didn't write that. Donald Trump definitely doesn't know what accumulation means.
Based largely on an accumulation of data.
Right. Partially on other factors beyond mortal ken.
That is a very good description of Moussa Sissoko as well. There's a lot of results over the last month, so we're not going to hit them all in detail, mostly because a lot of them were kind of awful to watch. But I want to start off, Ben, with the state of Spurs. We've had a lot of injuries. Danny Rose is apparently dead. Eric Lamella has, like, gone off to the Greylands with Frodo. How are you feeling about the current state of Tottenham Hotspur as we talk the night before we have to beat Ghent in the Europa League coming down from a deficit?
Yeah, so, I mean, without getting too much into the Fulham game already, you know, Vertonghen's back, and that already seemed to make a difference. You know, we're not deep enough at certain positions that we can seemingly survive with one of our key players out. And so, you know, with him back, it just means Danny Rose, and, you know, I think we've learned at this point that we can't ever worry about Eric Lamella suiting up for Spurs again, and we've largely figured out how to handle that. So with just Danny Rose out at this point, I feel better. I feel like we're set up to be okay again, I fucking hope. But it's hard to say. It's been a rough month.
Michael, do you think Vertonghen's return is going to patch at least some of the holes we've been seeing, or do you think it's Rose and, to a lesser extent, Lamella missing are still going to cause huge problems for us?
I mean, I think we can say pretty confidently, based on how Spurs have been at times completely amazing this year and Eric Lamella hasn't played at all, that Lamella is not an essential part of this team. I like him a lot, but the players we have are good enough. We've got enough depth in the positions that he plays. We can be very, very good without him. It seems to me at this point that Spurs just don't work without all of Dyer, Vertonghen, and Alderweireld. And so you could do it in the 4-2-3-1 like we did last year with Dyer at defensive midfield, or you can do it in a back three with all three of them. But when one of them is missing, we have really struggled against teams of any particular quality.
So have we had any games where we looked good where we have a back four without Dyer and Wanyama in midfield?
Oh, God.
We've seen that, really?
I guess the
it seems like that should be okay, right?
The City win early in the year, but it's that's run into the problem of that 4-2-3-1 where we just don't have we just don't progress the ball out of out from the back very well when we don't have a third player who drops into the back line properly. Because Wanyama can't do it, and if Dembele does it, you basically lose 80% of what Dembele is good at. And so, obviously the Liverpool match was a peculiar one because that was especially terrible. But like that was what happened in the Liverpool match. We just didn't have people who could progress the ball from the back.
Well, the Liverpool match was particularly awful because we sort of didn't want them to try to do what they did, and then it went exactly the way you would expect it to go once we did it. And it was pretty awful. I mean, that was probably our most snake bit early. The game where our injuries certainly seemed most front and center. And hopefully with Vertonghen back, that's not as much of an issue, but it was incredibly frustrating. Michael, we were just talking about formations, so I'm curious. We actually got a question about this from one of our listeners, but why if so clearly Vimmer and Davies aren't trusted or don't entirely work when we play with a back three, so why don't we play them in a formation, the 4-2-3-1, like we did last year? I mean, why don't we sort of revert back to that if we're dealing with all these injuries?
We did play 4-2-3-1 when they had the injuries. We've done both. I'm just going to sort of repeat myself, but the problem is that our 4-2-3-1 doesn't really work if we don't have Dyer in midfield. We have not seen that shape work without Eric Dyer. And if we do have Eric Dyer, then we can also play a back three, does a similar thing and works just as well, and frees Wanyama to do what he does best. So I think it's less about the 4-2-3-1 versus the 3-4-3 or whatever, and much more about the way that we need those three center backs or whatever we're going to call Dyer in order to form the base of our team in possession and be able to control the ball in the way that we want.
And just to play devil's advocate, we played against Fulham in a 4-2-3-1 without Eric Dyer, but with Harry Winks. And I think, it's hard to justify leaving out either Dembele or Wanyama when they're fit. But, Harry Winks seemed to do a lot to mitigate that loss and give us that passing, progressiveness from midfield.
So
that we've been lacking.
Let's talk about that Fulham game for a second. In particular, let's talk about Harry Winks. Now, Fulham are a championship club. I don't want to get carried away, but Johan Cruyff, we don't need to talk about that guy anymore after what Harry Winks did to Fulham, right? I mean, that was an incredible performance. Ben, how confident are you of selling off our entire team so we can keep, Harry Winks around for the rest of his career?
Yeah, I mean, whatever he wants to make, we should sell everybody we need to give him the wages. No, he was fantastic. I mean, Modric-esque is the word that was bandied about a lot during and after the game. And it wasn't too much of a stretch other than the fact that we were playing a championship struggler and not a real football team. But he was confident. He was capable on the ball. He made good runs. He held possession well. He just had a really complete performance. And it's really exciting to see how he's developed this season.
How much of that performance is his development? How much do you think is it's Fulham?
I mean, playing Fulham makes it easier to do things like, hold the ball and, maybe not get pressed as much as he would against a better team. But, the vision that he has on the field, that sort of transcends the opposition. He clearly has the ability to read the game well enough to, You know, he knows where he's going to put the ball after he gets it. You know, he can pick out those passes. You know, he uses the ball intelligently. You know, all of those attributes, you know, those aren't just a product of the bad opposition. That's just sort of who he is as a player. And, you know, it will be harder for him to execute against a better midfield. But, you know, I think we've seen enough of him by now that I'm certainly not worried that that's a problem for him.
Michael, do you think we're going to start seeing Winks start more in the league or in bigger games, given that we're starting to hit the meat of some of these cup competitions we're in?
Yeah, I mean, given, especially if we get through Ghent and we keep having two games a week, there's minutes for Winks, and he's clearly earned his way into the team. I didn't watch the whole Fulham match. He was fantastic in it. He was also not fantastic against Ghent. These are the sorts of things that you have with a young player who's learning and getting better. Is he's going to have really good games, and he's going to have not such good games. And so if we luck into him starting in a big game where he also has a really good game, as he did against Fulham, that's going to work out great. But I don't think we should look at him as a solution when he's also going to have games where he struggles against Ghent.
All right, we should look at him as the long-term solution to just football in general, but not
yes,
not this season. It might take him a few more games. As Harry Winks' star rises, other players' stars seem to be falling even deeper into the earth. Michael, is there any way Mauricio Pochettino is not just verbally and physically abusing Vincent Janssen in front of the other players at the training ground at this point? Like, there's no way he's not like slapping around and like using probably not PG phrases around to refer to him, right? Like, I mean, this is getting ugly with his place in the team.
I feel bad for him. He seems nice. Yeah, like, he seems kind of bad at football, but he seems nice.
Like, we're whipping the shit out of Fulham. Like, throw him on for the last 20 minutes just so somebody else doesn't have to go run around. I mean,
oh, you're signed as a striker, and you don't seem to be able to understand how to work with other people in order to get goals. It's a problem.
But he knows how to stick his ass out, so maybe there's another career for him in North London.
I get really frustrated with this about Pochettino is that he has these guys like Nkudu, like Janssen, like Josh Onuma, guys who are clearly, you know, not ready for prime time right now, but, you know, we weren't really expecting them to be or to have to be. And so
Janssen, we kind of were.
I mean, not like,
we were expecting him to be able to bring him on in like the 70th minute of a Fulham FA Cup match or maybe even start it. Like, I don't think those were outrageous expectations.
I mean, sure, they're expected to play as a backup. But the point is all of these guys are, you know, longer term projects. You know, they're young, they're inexperienced. You know, they haven't played in the Premier League. You know, the goal is clearly to develop them so that in the future they will be useful players. You know, like we're doing with Harry Winks, how we bring him on, you know, slowly and, you know, as needed and where we can afford it. You know, instead of giving these guys the minutes where we're three up on Fulham, you know, throw these guys on, or at least one of these guys on, and like let them, you know, play with a team that's kind of, you know, looking good and swaggering a little bit on the pitch, and like let them, you know, try to find a rhythm with those guys. You know, instead it's like, what, we get Moussa Sissoko again, who's, you know, 27 years old and has been shit for his entire career. Like, I don't understand what Pochettino is doing with these players. Is he seems to be missing opportunities to give them useful minutes that can help make them better in the future. You know, not playing Vincent Janssen, that's not going to make him better. That's not like he's not going to suddenly be good because he didn't play for an entire season, you know? So why are you not giving these guys these substitute minutes? Why are you bringing on Moussa Dembele for 30 minutes against Fulham? Why are you bringing on, you know, Moussa Sissoko to fumble around and fall over and hit his face on the ground? Like, I just don't understand as bad or as not good as these players are, you know, this is necessary to make them be useful in the future. Otherwise, we're just going to take an 18 million pound bath on Vincent Janssen, you know, in a year or two. And what's the point of that?
All right, but what if he just destroys their confidence and doesn't help them play? What if that makes them better?
That's an interesting strategy, Cotton. Let's see how it works out for him.
I mean, we could ask Roberto Soldado. There's a couple people we could, you know, just run it by. But I think we're going to try it out with these guys and see how it goes. Some of them, it's like you run into the whole thing with Vimmer, I think, with a guy like Onuma. Like, we were all very impressed with Josh last year, and I think we were all expecting big things from him this year. I thought he would be far more likely to sort of break out than Winks was, but here we are, and like, I don't have as much of a problem with, like, Onuma's sort of gotten the chances that you would hope for, and he hasn't really done much with them, but it's like you say, Ben, like, I don't know how we expect him to get better if we're not going to play them, or if we're not going to play him, we should be loaning them out so they're getting minutes somewhere. You know, this is what guys like Vincent Janssen are here for. Like exactly, like you said about Nkudu, it's what's the harm? Like, this is exactly the kind of game where we should be giving them a chance to swagger a little bit. But
right. It's, I mean, there's no cost to the team. We weren't going to blow the game at 3-0 up by playing Nkudu for 30 minutes. You know, I just don't get it. And I continue to not get it every time it happens.
I mean, it's important to remember we're not in training. You know, we don't see what's going on there. So we're not hearing, like, Vincent Janssen continually tell Mauricio Pochettino that, you know, jet fuel can't melt steel beams or whatever. We don't know what's happening on the training pitch, but it doesn't make a lot of sense from the outside. And it's a little frustrating to watch sometimes.
I don't know. I'm frustrated by his substitution patterns in the Fulham game. They didn't make much sense. But I don't think it's reasonable to hope for a manager who has a better history of bringing along, who has done a better job bringing along young players than Pochettino has. I have issues with Pochettino, but that really isn't it. Eric Dier, Dele Alli, now Harry Winks, you know, we are bringing along really good players into this side from out of from ages, like, we're playing lots of, like, 19 and 20 year olds on this team and getting the minutes and getting them involved. There are some of them that aren't playing that I'd like to see playing more, but I think that's not an issue with Mauricio Pochettino compared to a reasonable comparison manager.
I mean, I think, I don't know, like, just because he's done it doesn't mean he shouldn't be doing it more or couldn't be doing it more. And you look at the circumstances that prompted particularly Dier and Alli to get those minutes in the first place. You know, a lot of that was by necessity that happened to work out. Same with, like, Ryan Mason and Nabil Bentaleb. You know, like, yes, he has turned to those guys when circumstances have required it. But I don't know that he is, you know, doing the best job he can to carefully groom these other guys who are not as necessary, but who have potential long-term upside and less immediate upside. That's where I feel like he could be doing more.
I'm just saying, I have critiques as well. I just think that we should set the baseline.
And I think that might be where some of the frustration comes from, because you see what he did with guys like Dele and Winks and some of the other guys. And then you look at someone like, say, in Kudu, who I think, especially earlier in the year, I think was very impressive in the cameos he had. And that just didn't seem to translate into minutes. I know there were some injuries that played a part in that as well, but.
But I mean, giving someone minutes doesn't make them good. Ben Davis has gotten incredible amounts of minutes and he's just gotten bad. You know, player development is weird. Player development is unpredictable. It's not. Like, I'd like to see players given the best chance to succeed possible, but you know, that doesn't mean that they're going to get good, and that doesn't mean that they absolutely deserve those minutes.
But it's like it's not a guarantee. But I mean, I don't see the logic of, like, why is Josh Onuma and Vincent Janssen on the bench in the first place, and why are we bringing on, you know, Dembele and Sissoko at 3-0 up instead of them, when we're clearly, you know, the concern is not winning a football game at that point. It's just, what, like, letting Dembele play against his old club for 30 minutes, who you know, a guy who, like, we really can't afford to get injured in meaningless, fun 30-minute cameos, you know, like, playing Josh at that moment maybe isn't going to make him good, but it, like, if he's there to come on for 5 minutes at the end of the match, like, what was the point of that?
I agree with the critiques. I just think that, like, to me, this is a very minor issue because Pochettino's record is very good, and it's most managers are much worse.
I would say I would agree it's minor if we had the squad depth to make these players irrelevant to our present, you know. But the fact that we've struggled so much managing our injury crises over the course of the season, it suggests that there's a lot of room there to figure out who else might work rather than just seeing what Musa Sissoko can do again. You know, like, we don't have the backups that can step in effortlessly and make us just as good as we were before. And we've had so many problems where, you know, when someone goes down, we don't have an answer for that, that I would say figuring out what guys like Nkudu and Anoma and Jansen can give you, I think is a big failure, because it's not like we have, you know, Willian on the bench ready to come on in a pinch. It's like we need something. And turning those guys into that something, or figuring out if they even have that potential, you know, is important, especially as we go into the summer and have to buy new squad players, you know. Like, I don't know. I just feel like we could be positioning ourselves better in terms of figuring out what our squad can and can't do. And those are opportunities that I think have been missed by Pochettino.
I mean, I would like to see Nkudu play over Sissoko. Vincent Janssen has played over 1,000 minutes. I mean, we've seen him play. He's played lots of competitive matches. You know, it's not obvious at this point that what he needs is to continue playing competitive matches badly. You know, I don't know what he needs. Maybe it couldn't hurt, but, like, I we haven't seen, for the most part, these players again. Sissoko's gotten more minutes than he should. Other players should get those minutes, but. I don't know. I got involved in this conversation because I was feeling like it was overdoing a minor issue, and now we're continuing arguing about a thing that I think is still overdoing a minor issue. So I've undercut my point in several ways.
So let's talk about something that is obviously not overdoing something, because nothing's more important than trophies. Spurs have 3 games left till the FA Cup final. We have a championship team in the next round, but things are probably going to tighten up. We're probably going to see all Premier League teams by the semifinals. Michael, do you think which of the competitions Spurs are in, which would be a top 4 race in the league, the FA Cup and the Europa League, I mean, how should we be prioritizing those at this point in the year?
Yeah. So, I mean, and the thing about it is that, like, when you're in knockout competitions, it's kind of weird to prioritize. Like, you know, I assume Spurs are going to play a first choice team at home or at Wembley on Thursday. When you're watching this, when you're already listening to this pod, you know the answer to that question. And I think they should. You know, it's one match, and you try to win it. You can. And an European trophy is good. And then in a couple weeks, they've got Millwall, who are I mean, do they have to play a strong team there? Like to me, the team should prioritize, should send out reasonably strong teams to win those games, and then should but, like, you know, let me back up here. the problem is that it is hard in a knockout competition once you've reached a reasonable place to run out a crappy team. I don't think that Spurs should run a crappy team on Thursday against Ghent, and if I don't think they should run a crappy team on Thursday against Ghent, I don't think they should run out a crappy team against pretty much anyone. In the Europa League, I don't think that they should run out a really crappy team against Millwall when they're one game away from the semis. And so ultimately what Spurs need to do then is find ways to rotate this team, find structures of this team that can work, that you can repeat even as you move some players, Moussa Dembele, in and out of the squad. And that's a hard problem. I think there's a very good chance that you prioritize these competitions as Spurs have in the past, and you get knocked out because it's one game and anything can happen in one game, or anything can happen in 180 minutes. But I don't think that Spurs should be not trying to win those competitions. So they just got to figure it out.
Ben, how are you feeling about our chances at the FA Cup now? I mean, looking at sort of how this is stacking up, it's probably going to be some pretty big Premier League teams after by the time we reach the semifinals, not to get ahead of ourselves, because Millwall's not going to be an easy game, but it should be.
I mean,
well, but it's London. There's probably going to be riots in the middle of the game. I mean, I don't know.
But Millwall are bad, so
we should beat Millwall. Yes.
Yeah. So getting ahead of ourselves, if we beat Millwall, the remaining pool will likely be Man City, Arsenal, and then one of Chelsea or United. The semis are going to be tough, but a semifinal against one of those teams, you're one game away from Wembley, you go all out at that point. There's no reason to punt that game. In terms of our chances, it's all going to depend on the draw. At this point, I would rather not face Chelsea. Man City look like, they're putting their troubled days behind them a little bit. I would want to face Arsenal in the semis because I just can't handle a cup final against Arsenal. My mental state is too fragile as it is. I can't handle that. Losing them in a semifinal would suck, but beating them in a semifinal en route to the final would be great.
In the final would be the best thing ever, but I don't know if I could take my – I don't know if I'm able to handle the buildup and potential devastation of that match if we lose.
Right. I mean, the weeks leading up to it will be just total agony. The whole 90 minutes will be agony, and then if we lose, the rest of my life will be agony.
Yes, you are married to an Arsenal fan. That was probably be very bad. I mean, the only way that would be good is if we just absolutely score four goals in the first 20 minutes. But even if we win, that's definitely not happening.
And even if we scored four goals in 20 minutes, I would still be nervous as fuck for the next 70.
Yes.
I am a Spurs fan.
I don't know if I could watch that game. I think I would just find drive somewhere where I won't get cell phone service and sit there for the 4 hours or whatever it would take, which probably makes me a bad Spurs fan, but I'm just, I get sick thinking about it. Ben, we play Ghent tomorrow night, or probably as you're listening to this. I don't know. I
always love to listen to Wheeler Dealer directly during a Spurs match. I think it's the best experience.
It's the only way. It's really the only way. If you play us backwards, it's actually commentary on the Spurs match. You should try it out. We do it all in advance, so we know about our disappointment before it happens. I don't know. Europa League. You want to win it?
Yeah, I mean, always. I'm always a proponent of winning a European trophy, even if it's the Europa League.
You are Cartilage Free Captain's Europa League truther, so you're there first.
Yeah. The Europa League is good. It's not fun to play in or watch, but winning it would be good. I'm glad it gives us something to do on Thursdays.
Are you?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, look, we're only down 1-0. We should be able to whip the shit out of them at home. I could see us pulling off a 2-1 victory, you know, conceding a consolation goal in late in the game after utterly dominating and then going out on away goals or something incredibly stupid like that. But again, we're here. It's only one goal down. You know, we have no reason not to.
Except it's a Europa League match and we're Spurs. So,
yeah, who gives a fuck? No, I don't know. I want to win.
Maybe we can convince the Europa League that we're Manchester United and the game should be played yesterday instead of today. That's pretty fucked up. I know they say it's not because it's Manchester United that happened, but it's definitely because it's Manchester United that happened.
Yeah, I mean, we torpedoed our League Cup final against Chelsea a couple of years ago because of the Europa League and having to manage our squad over a tight period. And to see Manchester United get a bonus day of rest because they've got the cup final this weekend really, really pissed me off. Whatever justification they're going to fucking pretend warranted that.
Yeah, they don't want to have Saint-Etienne and Lyon play like two games in 2 days in a row next to each other. It's like, all right, like shut the fuck up. That's not why you're doing this. So moving from the Europa League to the league, we have on paper, we have what looks like a fairly generous schedule for the next several weeks. I believe our next game against anyone, any real good, we got Everton. We have Stoke this coming weekend. We have Everton the week after that. And then you have to get down to the end of March when we play Southampton to get to anyone else good. And then after them, you have to get to, I don't know, are we still considering Leicester good? You have to get all the way down to the end of April where we play Arsenal. We have a pretty, on paper, kind-looking fixture list. Michael, is it? Should we secretly be worried about this just because we're Spurs fans, or is there actually a reason to be secretly worried about this?
The problem is, I mean, none of these teams are worth like worrying about on their own. Like we play Stoke this weekend, and Stoke are okay, and so you should worry because like you could lose to an okay team. That happens a lot. And that's really the issue, which is that the top of the Premier League is so strong that we want to be getting the bounces. We want to be who's in form, who is getting lucky, who is not getting injured. That's going to be the main thing that determines who's going to be top four. It's not like it's super obvious that one of these teams is significantly better or significantly worse than the rest of them. So each of these games matters a ton because we're in a really, really tight race for three remaining spots against five teams that are basically as good as us. And so every single point is going to matter. And that's why we should be worried, not because there's something special about any of the teams that we're playing, but because we need to rack up points here. And hopefully we do.
That's
yeah, I mean, the last time we had a generous fixture list was, you know, in that period in December where we rattled off six straight wins. You know, we'd had kind of a rocky start to the season, some erratic form. And then after, you know, pounding out those six wins, we found ourselves, you know, wondering if we were in a title race. You know, and that's kind of what it's going to take is, can we rattle off a series of wins against some teams that are, you know, a lot worse than us before we kind of get into the meat grinder at the end of the season where we have to play, you know, United and Arsenal. And we play City again? Are we done with City?
No, we're done with City.
Yeah, our schedule is pretty easy because we've gotten through a really tough stretch.
Yeah, United and Arsenal are the only direct competitors for top four that we play.
Right, and we kind of finish out the season with them like very close to the end of the season. So, you know, winning those games now would give us some breathing room.
I don't know about you guys, but I mean, this top four race is going to be real tight. Probably really fun if, you know, you're not us. But United is the penultimate league game of the season, and I'm already having an existential crisis about that game. I feel like I don't know, that feels like our season's going to hinge on that game. And given our history against teams like coached by Mourinho and Manchester United, I'm not feeling good about it already, even though it's months away. and it's already looking ugly. And hey, the North London Derby is 2 weeks before that. So, you know, lots of low pressure games to end the season with. With West Ham in between. So it's not like we even get a real respite.
Yeah. That's why it'd be nice to win a trophy, because the league is terrifying.
I know that when I look at our schedule, I feel like what you said, Michael, is very important. This team, we need to pick up as many points as we can, because we're in a very tight race with a bunch of other teams who are as good or better than us. And it feels like those teams aren't going to drop points. And that's from like those 3 years where we just needed Arsenal to slip up like once and they just didn't do it towards the end of the year. And I know that like Liverpool have had a rough stretch where they dropped a bunch of points this year. Arsenal have had a rough stretch where they dropped a bunch of points. City have had a rough stretch where they dropped a bunch of points. United opened the year dropping a bunch of points they shouldn't have dropped, even though they haven't done it since. It's just, I don't know. I feel like even though this has happened to every team we're competing with, it just feels like it's not going to happen to them down the stretch, even though evidence suggests otherwise. And that's probably just my fatalism and my prior experience as a Spurs fan talking. But it would be really nice if some of these other teams could help us out and we can just roll up some points. But I don't know. I'm not counting on either of those things happening.
Just got to take it one game at a time, as they say. You know?
Just put one foot in front of the other. One beer behind the next.
Yeah, someone should tell the players that. I think that would be useful advice for them.
If only someone else had that kind of insight into sports, Ben. You should really share that with them.
Yeah, it's just one of the other things that's really frustrating about Pochettino is that like he doesn't express those classic football platitudes in, you know, a way that like gets the team focused and energized. It's a big miss. I mean, this is what happens when you have a foreigner in the dugout.
So before we move on to our listener questions, I just want to pull the panel. Our dearly departed panelist, Brian, is going to be at the game tomorrow. Do we think there is a way in which he and his compatriot Vince are going to affect the match against Ghent? Do we think there's something he could do here, Ben? Or will do?
I mean, you know, run out of the pitch and dive in front of a goalward bound strike.
Tie a rope around Son's neck or something like that. You don't think that'll happen?
No, that's weird and racist.
That's weird and racist, of course. Michael, any surprises from our compatriots tomorrow, or are they just going to be cheering on the lads?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone knows that that fans can really be a 12th man. So I would expect them to be the 12th and 13th men. And then everyone around there would be the 14th and 15th and 16th. Like it could be hundreds, thousands.
Tens of thousands. Players
first verse.
I hear they've sold it out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many people fit in Wembley, but probably like at least 100.
That's a lot of men.
A lot. And women.
And women don't go.
If everyone says matches. There's like a 12th man, there could also be a 13th woman. Well, you know.
We'll be like a first.
We could have so many players playing football. There's no chance Ghent could do anything.
None at all. But they've got supporters there too, so there's got to be at least like a dozen Ghent supporters there, right?
The tactics get really complicated once you get like 100,000 against 1,000 people playing soccer. Then you get into sort of like the like pre-modern village games where everyone's just like kicking each other in the shins as like some sort of expression of you know, sort of expressing various social conflicts that have been happening in the village. And that would be a fun way to play the Europa League.
It would be if the Europa League was entirely held by Florentine peasants. I think that would be a unique and welcome change to the competition, honestly. So call us up, UEFA. We've got it all figured out. Okay, so we have some questions from our listeners who have been desperately waiting for us to come back. Ben, what is Vince bringing us back from England?
He better come back with Eric Lamella's body.
Eric Lamella's body? I don't know. Is that in England? I guess Avalon's in England, right?
I demand evidence.
Michael, you studied religion. Avalon's sort of religion-y, I guess, kind of. Do we think Eric Lamella's remains are with us? Have they been transubstantiated? I mean, what do you think is there for Vince to bring back to us?
Yeah, I would take a more sort of a Lutheran model of this. That it is true that his remains are there to be brought back, but only when we are together in community can the transubstantiation happen. So it'll only be when Vince returns to us on Wheeler Dealer Radio as a community that we can then transubstantiate Eric Lamella's body back into form to rejoin Spurs. Not sure where I was going with this.
I thought you might say, like, so he could go up to heaven and, like, elbow his way into the pearly gates or something like that.
But, no. It recreates the body of Christ in every member of the community. So I guess we would all, like, elbow each other.
Do you think we would all get, like a really questionable haircut?
Yeah, I think we would. I think it would really improve our cheekbones.
We would make a really good sneer. Like, we would all get much better at that because Eric Lamella is better at that.
So we would have that 12th and 13th, et cetera, man, all be Eric Lamella.
Oh, my God. You're right.
Just an army of Eric Lamellas.
Yeah.
Man, who knew Lutheran theology would be so important to Spurs run-in at the end of the season?
I mean, I think you were kind of right, though, when you made the Arthurian references. I expect Vince to stumble upon a pond somewhere, and the Lady of Lake will hold forth Eric Lamella's bloodied elbow as a token for Vince to now wield, and so he can take his place on the pitch.
Would it be like
channel that spirit?
Would it be a bloody elbow, or would it be like a cleat with some of Peter Cech's face hanging off of it?
You know, I'm not sure. That's kind of what Vince is there to find out.
What if it would be his hair? It's pointy. You could stick it in a stone or something.
I don't know. It's not as sharp as his elbow.
Good point. What is? So, Vince, we're expecting something from Avalon or maybe a representation of Lutheran theology. No pressure.
Failing that, if you could get us some jerseys, that'd be cool.
Yeah, I would really like a Harry Winks third kit if you could get me one, so... Get on there.
If you see any Tom Carrolls on sale, bring them all.
Go to Swansea. Get him an official Tom Carroll, a new one. Get him that. He could use it. Speaking of, I'm going to go off this question a little bit, but at Neb989 wants to know, is Tom Carroll playing the Xavi or Iniesta role at Swansea? Let's actually talk about this seriously, though, Ben. Why is Carroll so successful at Swansea? And you can, clear your throat with your praise of Tom Carroll, but I actually do want to hear why you think he's been so successful there.
He's obviously playing the Messi role.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
And the Xavi role. I think he's doing both at the same time because he's Tom Carroll.
Yeah, I mean, he's playing all of the roles. He's Messi, Neymar, Suarez. Like, he's just got all of Barcelona channeled through him. No, Tom Carroll is doing well at Swansea because Tom Carroll is good at football, and he's playing in a system that kind of plays to his strengths. So, I don't know. This isn't super shocking to me to see Tom Carroll be good at football.
I mean, he wasn't super great when he was at Swansea before, so it's a little...
Well, he didn't really get a ton of time at Swansea before. He was playing as a sub in cup matches. Like, he never really got into the team. But Paul Clement seems to like him and seems to, kind of put him in the heart of midfield. And, I mean, the reality is a team like Swansea is probably his level. But, he's clearly good enough to play in the Premier League. And... Yeah, I don't know what else needs to be said. Tom Carroll's a lot better than Ryan Mason.
I think much like our discussion of Vince's gift, it's important for us to look at the literature here. And much like Paul Atreides was not a Fremen, but yet rose to become their leader and savior, Tom Carroll's not Welsh, yet he is rising to become their leader and savior. And as we all know on this podcast, Tom Carroll does lots of drugs, too. So I think the Dune comparison really explains what's going on with Tom Carroll at Swansea. And I hope that...
So he's become a navigator? Is that what's happening?
No, he's become the Quajits Harat. I don't know how to say that. The whatever.
Kwisatz Haderach?
Yeah, there you go. He's the product of a long-term Welsh breeding program. And now he's going to save them from relegation, just like we all plan. And maybe there's, like, fish humans in tanks somewhere in there. I mean, that might explain Paul Clement. but
I mean, I'm uncomfortable with your white savior narrative for Tom Carroll, but
but we'll, I'll go with it. We'll roll with it. Yeah. Michael, this comes from the R. Gosling. He wants to know, what is Eric Lamella doing in his time recovering, or does he no longer exist? We sort of covered this earlier, but I'd like to dive into it with a little more detail.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that this is a another major theological question, and not only sort of how is Eric Lamella transubstantiated into reality in the moment in which we all eat of his body, figuratively,
holistically. I don't care.
These are theological questions. Exactly how figurative it is, or whether it becomes literal in the moment of community, as Lutherans say, it all depends. I think where is he in the absence of our community is a great question. If it becomes real only through that process of sort of communal engagement and shared belief and practice, where is he otherwise? Is he sort of awaiting that? Are there other communities which bring him into being and allow him to elbow people and double foot tackle keepers figuratively? I don't know. I don't know. It's a mystery.
Philosophers have been grappling this with this for weeks now. It's, you know, just since December. Who knows if we'll ever come up with an answer for it. I mean, schisms have occurred in communities as tightly knit as Spurs Twitter over this. And, you know, I don't think we're likely to see an answer anytime soon.
So, and I heard Windy thought that it was entirely figurative, that it's just a way of talking about community, and that's some bullshit. It happens for real, but only when the community comes together.
Yeah, I think it's completely ridiculous, especially when you hear about, like, you know, Dustin was arguing vociferously on the site that Eric Lamella never existed in the first place, and this is just all an invention by the Pope. And I really thought that took it too far and really involved a level of dogma into this conversation that did not need to be involved. But, you know, Dustin is a well-known Eric Lamella skeptic and radical. And frankly, I would expect nothing less than him to interject this kind of destructive rhetoric into this debate. So, yeah, we'll find out when he's better, but that's probably not going to be for a while. So,
good answer.
Yeah, I know.
You guys sound like you're having fun.
Yeah, we are. We have fun on this podcast. Michael, this one is also – we'll start with you on this one. Let's start with Ben and give Michael a moment because he probably has to gird himself to answer this one. This comes from Travaris Cadet on Twitter. He wants to know, what did Eric Dyer and Dele Alli get each other for Valentine's Day this year?
Presents. Sorry, I was on Twitter. What are we talking about? Eric Lamella. No, Eric Dyer and Dele Alli, Valentine's Day. If Dele's constant interviews on Spurs TV are any indication, Eric Dyer is very sartorially challenged and just cannot dress himself. And so I'd like to think that Dele Alli bought him some very nice outfits, probably a really cool jacket, so they can match when they go out in public.
Dele does buy good jackets for himself.
He does buy good jackets. And there's apparently a running joke in the squad that Eric Dyer wears clothes that are like 8 sizes too big and can't dress himself in public.
Michael, so, have at it.
You know, Eric Dyer forgot to buy Alli something, probably.
Yeah, I think that Ben is exactly on the right track, which is that it doesn't diminish their feelings for each other in any way, but I think that Dele would like to improve Eric, like to help him be the best person he can be. But instead of just buying him stuff and you make it into something real, you make it into a shared You make it into time spent together. You take him shopping yourself. You hit your favorite shops. You figure out the places that'll have the clothes that'll fit his body best. because you know it quite well, and you stop in and you try things on, and so then it becomes something you're doing together rather than simply sort of like rather than saying, oh, I don't like the way you dress. That's a bad starting point for a gift. It becomes time you spend together, and they can and can share that time. And Eric Dyer probably again, you know, you don't just buy Dele Alli a set of DVDs of you know your favorite performances of Brecht plays. You actually take him to the theater and you hope that you can help him to understand the sort of complexities of Marxist theory as they're being propounded in front of him.
I think you're onto something there. I think Eric Dyer probably wants him and Dele to have an experience to remember. So he got him something like either a play like that or like an Escape the Room, something that they thought they could really like, you know, a mental exercise together. Perhaps they went to see Faith No More. Shit.
Sleep No More.
Sleep No More. Thank you. They wore masks and went to an old reunion concert. Yeah, they wore masks. Shit, this is such a good bit. They wore masks. They went to an elaborate hotel in New York City together, which really does seem up their alley. And you know,
yeah, an
really
immersive lived theater experience.
Yeah, exactly. Immersive theater, absolutely. Because,
you know, with his knowledge of French cinema and all the, you know, like, just philosophy that he consumes, Eric Dyer understands the fullness of the human experience and wants to do that. I think Dele Alli probably bought Eric Dyer just a dildo, which is, you know, the thoughts, it what counts. So,
you know, I think the thing that, like, you know, I'm worried about for them is that, you know, because they're so different and because, you know, they are interested in sharing what they love and kind of broadening the horizons of the other one, you know, they have to be careful, you know, that they still accept each other for who they are and don't try to remake them, you know, into the version of each other that is their idealized version. Because, I mean, that's death for a relationship, you know.
We've already seen videos of Eric Dyer waving at the camera. I mean, that's a bad sign.
Right. I mean, you know, Dele has to accept that Eric is who he is. And
the Eric likes,
you know,
artichokes.
If he can't accept who Eric is, you know, while just sharing the things that means a lot to him, you know, there's a fine line to walk there that, you know, I hope they can get through.
We can only hope those two crazy kids will make it. Our final question from the very good Twitter name of Dire Straits. He wants to know, which English team would Guy Fieri support? Ben.
I mean,
there's a lot of choices here.
There's a lot of choices. I mean, like, you know, he has this really like tacky ass middle America style, which, you know, probably fits in with the Chav culture at Chelsea, a lot, but you know, he's also, you know, more of a man of the people than that. You know, he does explore diners, drive-ins and dives. And so I think he would want something maybe a little more salt of the earth than he's going to get from the Chelsea experience. But I'm not sure how you marry that level of sheer tackiness with that. So I don't know if Michael.
I think there's a clear answer here. I think there's a clear answer here. You're talking about that level of tackiness, wanting to be salt of the earth, like awful hair. You know, I think it's Newcastle. I think, you know, I think he's got to be a Newcastle fan. Besides, I watched the Geordie Shore. It seems like he would fit into that show fairly well. Michael?
Yeah, it seems that London is right out, but at the same time he is lazy and that's not going anywhere. So I did learn that he got his start making a restaurant called Johnny Garlic's. His first restaurant was called Johnny Garlic's, which is an even worse name than Guy Fieri.
Oh, you want to hear something worse? You know what he calls his like circle of friends? The Garlic Mafia. That's pretty terrible. I don't know, Blackpool could be another destination. Somewhere tacky.
I like that.
Somewhere tacky.
you know.
Yeah, no, my knowledge of England was proved radically lacking for making good jokes here.
Such potential, and we all dropped the ball. We're sorry, listeners. It's been a while. Our bits will be better next week. I
don't know. I mean, you say London's out, but I mean, you have to remember, like, he does have that fucking monstrosity in Times Square, you know. So somewhere like West Ham's Olympic Stadium.
Yeah, but we already have really... like, we already have a shitty American like food centric television person who's like a West Ham fan. So,
well, he says he's a Spurs fan exclusively now.
Okay, but he likes both. I don't know. I mean,
if he asked his good friend Chris Saliza, Saliza would point him to Arsenal.
Chris Saliza would do an excellent job of indoctrinating him in the ways of Arsenal. They're both tacky. They're both useless. No one seems to like them despite their high-profile jobs. I mean, I think they would fit in. You know, when Chris Saliza tells him, you know, about the magic of Highbury, you know, something about that clock. I don't know. Like, Chris Saliza... Noted Arsenal fan Chris Saliza could be a useful guide for Guy Fieri as he makes his way into English football. Ben, do you think noted Arsenal fan Chris Saliza would be useful for Guy Fieri as he looks to make an English football decision?
I mean, I think they're both two peas in a pod, so I don't see how you're wrong.
So you think noted Arsenal fan Chris Saliza could help Guy Fieri become a noted Arsenal fan as well?
I think that's correct. Noted Arsenal fan Chris Saliza is exactly, you know, the guiding light that Guy Fieri will follow to becoming a noted Arsenal fan of his own.
Guys, you did a nice job saving that bit. I'm very proud of both of you. On that note, I think we're going to wrap this one up. We have games against Ghent. Vince, Brian, bring us back a win and several customized jerseys. And then we play Stoke on the weekend. Hopefully we have some wins to talk about next week, because we will be back next week, because I am done with this stupid freelance project. Michael, where can the people find you on the internet?
All right, well, hopefully I'll be writing some new articles, ESPN, Washington Post, and as always, you can get all of the expected goals map you want at Brett Rainbow.
Ben, where on the internet can people find you?
Well, I have two accounts, obviously, as all prominent Spurs bloggers do.
Yeah.
You can find me talking
Daniel's
about
graphics it. Has been pretty light lately, though.
I know. Well, you can find me talking about my first team, Tottenham Hotspur, at Gary Rootbeer. But you can find me talking about my second team, Arsenal, at The Fix.
That's right. Your second life as a noted Arsenal fan, Chris Saliza.
Developing a Chris Saliza mythology here. This is good.
It's just facts. It is just facts. You can find me talking about Spurs at my primary account, which is at Brett Rainbow, and you can find me talking about noted Arsenal fan Chris Saliza at my alternate account, which is at SkipJack0079. Thank you guys very much. It's been good to be back. It was good talking to you guys. Come on, you Spurs.